He was named after an archangel, an angel of the highest qualities and rank. He lived and worked during a period of history known as the High Renaissance. And to the world over, Raphael himself achieved some of the highest ideals of painting and art. In his brief life of only 37 years, he created hundreds of works that are the clearest expression of the harmony and balance for which the Renaissance is famous. He took the qualities of two other great Renaissance painters, Michelangelo and Da Vinci, combined them, and then added his own touches of color, drama, and sweetness. For hundreds of years, his work was studied in art classes, where it was considered the perfect example of academic art theories. There have been few periods of history that created the genius and talent the Renaissance did, except perhaps ancient Greece, a period from which the Renaissance took its inspiration. Raphael Santi was born in a later part of the Renaissance, 30 years after Da Vinci and 8 years after Michelangelo, both of whom would outlive him. The Renaissance took place mostly in Italy, which was then divided into city-states with their own rulers and government. Michelangelo and Da Vinci did much of their work in Florence, but Raphael was the leading painter of Rome, the home of the Pope. Rome was not the original home of Raphael. He was born in Urbino, Italy, on April 6, 1483, the same year Portugal refused a suggestion by a young sailor named Christopher Columbus that he sail west in search of a route to the Indies. Urbino, thanks to the interests of its ruler, the Duke, had become a cultural center of Italy. Even as a child, Raphael was exposed to some of the finest art, artists, and ideas of his age. Raphael's mother died when he was only 8, and his father, who was a painter, died only 3 years later. By the time he was only 11 years old, Raphael was an orphan. In the few years he had with his father, he had already picked up the basics of painting and had tried his hand at his own little pictures and portraits. His father was a court painter for the Duke of Urbino, and Raphael sometimes went along to the palace to watch his father at work. The Duke liked young Raphael. He thought he was a bright and talented boy with a possible future of his own in art. So when Raphael's father died, the Duke encouraged the boy's uncle to continue with his education. Raphael was sent to the town of Perugia to study with an important painter who had a name almost the same as his city's, Perugino. Perugino introduced Raphael to the latest ideas in Italian art and also influenced his student's early work, which contains the same sentimental qualities as those of his teacher. At the age of 21, Raphael settled in the city that was the art capital of the world, Florence. At the time, all of Florence was talking about the two great battle scenes being painted in the town's city hall. One was being painted by the master Leonardo da Vinci. The other was being painted by his more youthful rival, Michelangelo. Raphael visited both artists and even made a sketch of one of Michelangelo's horses in his notebook. For 4 years in Florence, he set out to make a study of the work of both Michelangelo and Da Vinci. He visited many other artists and studios too, learning something new from each one. Raphael was an extraordinary and dedicated learner. He made it a point to study the techniques of not just his contemporaries, but of artists of the past. He had an amazing ability to identify what was superior in each work, and then to integrate it into his own work. From Da Vinci, he learned soft shadings, and how to balance his compositions, how to arrange the figures and background for the greatest visual effect. From Michelangelo, he learned to paint the idealized figures the Renaissance is known for, figures that had the form and beauty of classical Greek art. Raphael also visited morgues so he could sketch the corpses, and he often used models to act out scenes so he could accurately portray how they moved in his paintings. So avid was Raphael in his pursuit of learning that he even became an archaeologist. He participated in many digs that turned up ancient relics and statues that he thought could increase his understanding of art, and he had a special interest in Greco-Roman sculpture. These sculptures helped him create the idealized human forms seen in many of his paintings. Like all great Renaissance artists, Raphael's interests were broad and integrated. Besides painting and archaeology, he was also an architect, poet, and a historian. He read all the classics in the Bible, studied philosophy, and used the information and ideas from them as subjects in his work. At the age of 25, Raphael received a message. It was a message that would soon open to him the opportunity to complete his greatest works. The message came from the Pope in Rome, Pope Julius II. Julius was a pope with a dream. He wanted to transform Rome to the majestic city it had been under the Roman Empire. Julius gathered together the most renowned architects, painters, and sculptors of Italy to rebuild, redecorate, and restore Rome to its ancient glory. When he died, his successor, Pope Leo X, continued with much of that work. Under these popes, many of the great Renaissance painters and sculptors had the chance to achieve their highest potential. The three greatest of these, Michelangelo, Da Vinci, and Raphael, all worked on projects for the popes at various times in their careers. Raphael was given a large workshop in Rome, the city he would remain until he died. In that workshop, he created some of his most famous work. He produced religious paintings, tapestry designs, palace decorations, and portraits. The project the Pope offered Raphael when he first beckoned him to Rome was to decorate the staterooms in the Vatican Palace. The rooms were in the apartments in which Pope Julius himself lived and worked. It was a huge task and an enormous artistic challenge. Raphael couldn't have been happier. He saw his first chance to create something on the grand scale that Da Vinci and Michelangelo sometimes worked on. In fact, when Raphael arrived in Rome, Michelangelo was already hard at work on his scaffold beneath the Sistine Chapel, also in the Vatican Palace. Raphael was about to join the great master and about to become one himself. There were four walls in one room to paint first, and Raphael immediately came up with his themes. Four themes of human accomplishment. One was to be theology. He would depict that in a fresco called Disputa, or Disputation over the Sacrament. The second theme was philosophy, which he portrayed in a fresco called School of Athens. The third was the arts, in a fresco called Parnassus. And the final theme was law, in a fresco entitled Cardinal Virtues and Giving of the Law. Raphael hired assistants to help him with his work on the frescoes, unlike Michelangelo, who worked alone on the Sistine Chapel, unable to bear the presence of others. He sketched out all his work in notebooks, and the sketches were then enlarged by his helpers. Raphael always carried a notebook, jotting down ideas and anything he wanted to remember. One of his favorite uses of his notebook was to sketch any scenes he came across of mother and children. He often sketched peasant women and their children in the Italian countryside. He used the poses and expressions of these women and children in his many drawings and paintings of the Madonna. One reason his Madonnas are known for their gentleness and for their realistic maternal poses is that they were largely based on actual scenes of mothers and babies. Halfway through his work on the frescoes, after Michelangelo had already finished the Sistine Chapel, Raphael was frustrated by a slowdown brought on by the illness of Pope Julius. Julius, who was in rooms nearby, couldn't bear even the slightest noise. Yet at the same time, he was pressuring Raphael to finish. He sensed he was dying, and seeing the completed stanzas had become his final wish. Raphael did the best he could, but the Pope was desperately ill and died before the work was completed. The new Pope, Leo X, had always been an admirer of Raphael's paintings of the Madonna, so he happily gave him the go-ahead to finish the walls. Raphael finished his first room, called the Stanza della Signatura, 3 years after he started, in 1511. He then started a second stateroom, called the Stanza degli Adori, which he finished in another 3 years. For these walls, he chose four historical events that depicted the salvation of the Church through divine intervention. He, of course, included his patron, Pope Julius, in the paintings, and when Julius died, he included his successor, Leo X. When the second room was completed, Raphael started work on yet a third room, called Stanza dell'Incendio. The word incendio, like incendiary, means burning. It took its name from Raphael's main fresco in the room called The Fire in Borgio. There is a story that while Raphael labored on his Vatican frescoes, he became annoyed by the interference and criticism of a couple of cardinals who had dropped by to give their opinions of his work. When one complained that the face of the Apostle Paul is far too red, Raphael responded, "He blushes to see into whose hands the church has fallen." Raphael was known to always be a gentleman, but he was a gentleman with limits. Not all the cardinals were condescending to Raphael. One who admired and liked him very much was the Cardinal Bibbina. Raphael often discussed his work with Bibbina, who became so attached to the young artist that he decided he would make the perfect husband for his niece, Maria. Raphael seemed happy with the idea and wrote to a friend, "She is a beautiful young girl of the best reputation." However, his work was so consuming that Raphael suggested the engagement be postponed until he had more time to devote to a marriage. In the meantime, however, Maria came down with an illness and died. Raphael directed the building of her tomb. As far as we know, it was the only time he ever considered marriage. It would seem for most artists that painting frescoes on four large rooms in the Vatican would be enough to consume one's time and energy. But the Renaissance masters, besides their unsurpassed skill, were incredibly productive and versatile. So while Raphael painted away on the frescoes, he also took commissions from a number of private citizens. The most important of these was a banker named Agostino Chigi. Raphael painted a wall fresco in Chigi's suburban home and painted an entire ceiling with stories of Cupid and Psyche. It's said that when Michelangelo saw the ceiling, he growled, "All that Raphael learned about art, he learned from me." Michelangelo was known for his rather gruff and impolite manners, particularly with other artists. He tended to be competitive, especially with Da Vinci. But he also seemed to experience some jealousy of the rising young artist Raphael. Raphael was well-loved in Rome and always had a group of admiring friends and students trailing after him as he walked back and forth to work. On one such day, as he crossed the cathedral square in his usual handsome and impeccable dress, he came across Michelangelo, disheveled as usual, walking alone, a stern expression on his crooked face. Michelangelo stared at Raphael and his followers and announced with contempt, "You look more like a prince than a painter." Raphael calmly replied, "And you look like an executioner," and kept walking. There was a time, too, toward the end of Raphael's life, when Michelangelo deliberately set out to try and make him look bad. Raphael had been commissioned to make a painting for an altarpiece for a church in France. While he worked on it, another artist was commissioned to paint a picture for a wall in the same church. Michelangelo offered to help the other artist with his work so that Raphael's painting would look inferior. Raphael took this as a challenge. He became determined to do his work independently and alone to make it as excellent as possible. The painting, called The Transfiguration, was his last work, and although Raphael wasn't able to complete it, there's no doubt among scholars that it would have achieved all he hoped it would. Besides his work on the frescoes and at the Chigi Villa, Raphael also painted numerous portraits of cardinals, the Pope, and other members of the nobility. Still, his talents were not exhausted. He painted many great religious works on canvas, large drawings, and designs for tapestry. Then came another idea from the Pope. In 1514, when Raphael was 31, the Pope made him chief architect of St. Peter's Basilica, the most important church in Christendom. Renovation of the basilica was already in progress, but the Pope needed someone to replace the former architect who had died. That architect, Donato Bramante, had been a friend and admirer of Raphael's. In fact, Raphael had painted his face into some of his frescoes in the stanza rooms at the Vatican. It was Bramante who, on his deathbed, recommended Raphael as his successor in designing St. Peter's. Pope Leo readily agreed. Raphael wrote to his uncle at the time, "His Holiness has given me 300 gold ducats in advance because I am to be attached to the fabric of St. Peter's. Raphael was pleased about the money. Even with his fame, he always seemed to struggle, just as Michelangelo did. Frequently, he wasn't paid as promised. While Pope Julius had been ill, much of Raphael's work on the frescoes was completed without payment. This is partly why he took so many other commissions. But in spite of the handsome advance in gold, Raphael had some doubts about whether he was skilled enough for the work on St. Peter's. He was well aware that other artists had complained that a painter could not be a successful architect too, even though Da Vinci had managed to be both. Raphael said to a friend at the time of his new responsibility, "I hope I shall not sink under it." He felt much better after he completed his models, and the Pope heartily approved them. Raphael worked on extensive, detailed designs for the basilica and was responsible for shifting its original Greek radial design to a Latin longitudinal design. However, none of his designs were actually built, although he did supervise construction on what had already been started. Whether this caused him disappointment is unknown. What is known is that he could have found consolation in the fact that many of his other architectural designs were built, including a chapel, a villa, and a palace in Rome, and a palace in Florence. Although he was little known when he arrived in Rome, by the time he'd been there only a few years, Raphael was famous throughout Italy. Because of his talents, and also because of his handsome appearance and personal charm, he was given the nickname Prince of Painters. Apparently, Michelangelo's sharp eye had not failed when he commented that the young painter looked more like a prince. Raphael had thick, dark, shoulder-length hair, large, soulful eyes under long, arched eyebrows, a youthful complexion, and a full, delicate mouth. He was said to be a true gentleman and an unselfish man who willingly offered help to students. He even gave free board and lodging to many of his assistants who were unable to pay for it themselves. He nursed sick friends, even when his workload was at its most demanding. One Roman wrote, "Nearly all people regard him as a god, but he is withal free from vanity, and he is friendly toward everyone." Like Da Vinci and Michelangelo, Raphael remained single, and as far as the world knows, had no children. As the frescoes and work on the basilica were proceeding, Raphael was also named the first superintendent of antiquities in Rome because of his interest in work in the field of archaeology. While writing about Rome one day, he had noticed that the stones from ancient monuments were being used for new buildings, and it had troubled him. When he brought it to the attention of the Pope was inspired to create this new position and to give it to Raphael. Raphael wrote at the time that he felt well prepared for the position because he had, in his words, been very diligent in studying these antiquities and having used much care in finding and measuring them carefully and by reading continuously good authors. He supervised the preservation of marble that held important Latin inscriptions, and he drew an archaeological map of Rome. He spent many hours supervising excavations, and he made detailed drawings of old buildings and Roman ruins. He planned a book that would include all the classical monuments, and he even invented an instrument to help measure ruins. A friend wrote of him, "He is producing an admirable work. I refer to the town of Rome, which he almost reconstructed in its ancient grandeur." By now, Raphael was in charge of virtually all artistic projects in Rome under the papacy. He was in his mid-30s, and had attained the heights of achievement in the fields of painting, architecture, and archaeology. During all this time, Raphael had also become the most popular portrait painter in Rome. Members of the nobility all clamored to have their portraits painted by the brilliant young artist who was painting frescoes at the Vatican. One cardinal wrote, "I have such a love for perfection that I too have decided to have my portrait painted by Raphael." And in speaking of Raphael's portrait of his friend Tebaldeo, the same cardinal wrote, "Raphael has painted our Tebaldeo so realistically that the picture resembles him more than he himself." Raphael was even asked to paint a portrait of the Pope's pet elephant, which was placed above the doorway to his palace. One day, Pope Leo took Raphael into the Sistine Chapel to discuss yet another project with him. Above Raphael's head were the exquisite scenes of the creation of the universe to the birth of Christ, painted by the master Michelangelo. On the walls below these were scenes painted by other artists that depicted the life of Moses and of Christ. All that was missing from this pageant of Christian history were the stories of the lives of the apostles. The Pope wanted to fix that. He wanted Raphael to design tapestries to be hung beneath the wall paintings, tapestries that would be then woven by the most skilled workers in Flanders. Within only a few days, Raphael was hard at work sketching the lives of the apostles, while his students put together enormous sheets of cardboard, 10 feet high, to which they could transfer his drawings. The sketches Raphael made were literal representations of the stories told of the apostles in the Bible. When he finished them, he and his students transferred them to the cardboard using colored chalk. One of the most famous, called Miraculous Drought of the Fishes, shows how Christ sat in Simon Peter's boat, told the fishermen to let their nets down, and then filled the nets with a multitude of fishes, one of his first miracles. When all the drawings were finished, they were sent to Flanders to be transformed into tapestries. Today, some of those tapestries hang in the Sistine Chapel as planned. Others remain only in Raphael's drawings, which are held in museums, and are believed to be more beautiful than the tapestries themselves. These drawings and tapestries had an enormous influence on future painters, because they are Raphael's best examples of narrative art, art that tells a story. He also painted many pictures that influenced artists toward the narrative form. When he was 34, Raphael bought a new house not far from St. Peter's Square, where it would be an easy walk to work. It was a distinguished brick and cement palace designed by his old friend Bramante, former architect of the Basilica. On the lower floor was a row of arches, and on the upper floor there were tall, narrow windows divided by columns. Raphael loved his house, and whenever he could, he shut himself into his studio with the carved wooden ceiling and worked there alone and in quiet. But before long, the house became too small to hold all his work and the many students he so freely welcomed into his life. In 1520, when he was 37 years old, he purchased a piece of land and started to design a bigger house. The house would never be built. One day in 1520, Raphael returned home after a trip to the country to study the ruins outside of Rome. He started to work on his painting, The Transfiguration, which had been commissioned as the altarpiece for a church in France. At the top of the painting is Christ, suspended in clouds. Beneath him are the three apostles, who have fallen to the ground atop a mountain, overcome with their vision of him. At the foot of the mountain are the other apostles and a group of people begging them to heal an epileptic child. Some of the apostles lean over as if to try to help. Others point up to Christ to indicate only he can save the child. Raphael picked up his brush to work on the figure of St. Andrew, who sits in the foreground. When his studio grew too dark to paint, he put his brushes aside and wrapped himself in a cloak. Suddenly he was feeling cold. The next day, Raphael awoke with a raging fever. His friend sat by his bedside, and the Pope came by several times to give his blessings. On the 6th of April, Raphael's 37th birthday, he called a lawyer and made his will. Only a few hours later, he died. The year was 1520. An ambassador who was in Rome at the time wrote, "Nothing is talked of here but the death of this excellent man who closed his first life at the age of 37. He gave promise of many great things, but his renown, which is subject to neither time nor death, will be perpetual." Grieving Romans filed into Raphael's house for a reverent look at his last painting. His funeral mass was celebrated at the Vatican, and that last masterpiece, The Transfiguration, was placed at the head of his coffin. He was buried in the Pantheon, the temple built by Agrippa in 27 BC, so the ancient Romans could have one site in which to worship all their many gods. It had been his request to be buried there, in an ancient monument of the classical period of history he so loved, and whose ideals he strove so hard to emulate. It is the judgment of history that he succeeded. Raphael was a man and an artist whose own skills and creativity were enhanced by what he learned from others. His early work, until he was about 21, shows the influence of his teacher, Perugino. His next period of work, between the ages of 21 and 25, was completed in Florence and shows the influence of Da Vinci and Michelangelo. The rest of his work, from the ages of 25 until he died at the age of 37, reflects many influences and yet is uniquely his own. One of the most famous works from his early years when Raphael worked with Perugino is The Night's Dream, a good example of Raphael's expertise at narrative painting. A knight, in armor, sleeps on his shield under a sapling tree and dreams of two female figures. On his right is the figure of war, who holds a sword and a book of laws. On his left is the figure of peace, who carries a branch of flowers. In the distance behind the figure of war is a fortress. In the distance behind the figure of peace is a quiet river and blue mountains. Each figure seems to beckon to him, one for the cause of justice, one for the cause of beauty. Raphael's ability with narrative influenced painters for many centuries. He was among the first to tell dramatic stories in his pictures, with the use of gestures, pose, and setting. One of the later artists who also became known for this ability was Rembrandt. After the work with his teacher Perugino came Florence. In the 4 years Raphael spent in Florence, he produced a famous self-portrait because he could not afford to hire models, a popular painting entitled St. George and the Dragon, and numerous Madonnas. The painting of St. George and the Dragon was commissioned by the Duke of Urbino, his father's former employer, as a gift for the King of England. The subject of the Madonna is perhaps associated with Raphael more than with any other artist. He loved the Madonna as a subject and painted her over and over in all kinds of poses and moods, playing with children, embracing and comforting them, grieving, relaxing in the countryside, or sitting before a background that is blank. But what Raphael's Madonnas are most known for is their sweetness. They all have round, gentle faces that reflect uncomplicated, sublime emotions. The 12-year period Raphael spent in Rome is the time in which he reached his peak as an artist and produced his most dramatic and refined works. He painted the entire walls of the three rooms in the Vatican called the stanzas. These frescoes, particularly those in the first room called Stanza della Segnatura, are considered Raphael's greatest achievement. Each wall has an arch to support the curved ceiling, and Raphael brilliantly incorporated the arch and curve into his designs. The School of Athens, which covers one wall, is probably his most popular and admired work. Every year, thousands of art students and fans flock to see it, because it so perfectly captures the classical spirit of the High Renaissance and the balance of composition that made Raphael famous. In this painting, Raphael used the arch as a background to his entire scene. In the foreground are philosophers, mathematicians, and scientists who lived during different ages of Greek history, including Pythagoras, and in the center, Plato and Aristotle. Plato points upward to the sky with his finger, to indicate his interest in ideas and knowledge that weren't in the material realm. Aristotle has an outstretched arm before him, with the palm facing downward, to indicate his interest in practical ideas of the material realm. The fresco symbolizes the historical continuity of Plato's ideas. Raphael used the painting as an opportunity to include the faces of people he knew and admired, and people who shared the same love of beauty and truth the philosophers represented. Plato has the face of Da Vinci. A thoughtful student taking notes in the front of the painting has the face of Michelangelo. Euclid, the famous Greek mathematician, has the face of Donato Bramante, the chief architect of St. Peter's Basilica before Raphael took over the post. And the face of a young meditative student leaning against a wall is the face of Raphael himself. While in Rome, Raphael also painted several Madonnas, religious pictures and portraits, worked as chief architect of the Vatican, and designed 10 tapestries for the Sistine Chapel. Among his greatest religious works of that period are the Alba Madonna and the Madonna of the Chair. The Alba Madonna got its name from the Duchess of Alba, who owned the painting in the 18th century. It's known for its serenity and sweetness, as all Raphael's Madonnas are, but also for the technical perfection in how he posed the figures in the picture. The figures, a Madonna and two children, are arranged in a geometric fashion, as is popular with all the Renaissance painters. In this case, the figures are in a pyramid structure, a design very popular with Da Vinci as well. Raphael did not invent a new style or approach to art as some great painters did. He didn't start a cultural revolution, nor did he found a new school or movement. What he did do was exemplify the very highest qualities and learning of his own time and contemporaries. He was not the least bit ashamed of learning from others. In fact, he believed that learning from others and from the present and the past was the key to human attainment and growth. He pursued that learning with a passion, and then he added to it his own gifts, the ability to tell a story on canvas, to capture the subtle and spiritual expressions of the human face, and to portray human grandeur. His respect for knowledge and history shines through in all his work, as does his compassion and sensitivity. He may have been the prince of painters, but in the work of Raphael Santi, it becomes clear that to him, nobility was simply an inherent quality of being human.
This is the end of the session.